Okay, so we wanted to explore a little bit more. So we saw the issue of Smichas Gula Tefillah, and we noted there that Smichas Gula Tefillah, even though the Gemara doesn't make it very clear, but it's really asking two questions at once. When it asks, does Ma'ariv require Smichas Gula Tefillah? And then, essentially, the answer seems to be yes, but it doesn't make clear that it's really somewhat of a split decision, because there really are two ways in which we fulfill Smichas Gula Tefillah. One is the ordering of the elements of Tefillah, and the other is just how absolute we are in terms of requiring a hermetic sealing between the Gula and the Tefillah. So when we say that the answer is yes, so we're talking about the ordering of the elements, and it's clear that that is important. That's where the Gemara brings in the topic to begin with. And that's certainly a big deal, because the Gemara is talking about whether the Geula was at night or not, and that is tied into the question of whether Tfilos Be'emsa Tiknum. So it's not a minor point, and this was also invoked in the context of the whole Machlokas, Rashi and Tosfos. That was the first Machlokas Rishonim in Shas. It was a part of Tosfos' objection to Rashi, when Rashi said that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyashma with Kriyashma al-Hamita. That would violate the conclusion of the sugya that we hold Smichus Gula Tefillah. So the issue of the ordering is clearly significant and a big part of where this is going. But there's also a second question together with it, that when we talk about Smichas Gula Tefillah, we also mean that there can't be any interruption between Gal Yisrael and Tefillah. And when it comes to Shacharis, we mean business when we say that. And we don't allow any kind of daylight at all to interfere between the two. So that prompts some questions. So some of the questions are answered one way, some of the questions are answered differently, some questions don't seem to be answered at all. So first of all, the Gemara addresses, well, we have Hashkivenu and we have Hashem Svasai. So how do we have Hashkivenu? Does that indicate that we're not worried about Smichas Gula Tefillah? So the Gemara says, no, it doesn't tell us that, because we have Hashem's Fasai, and that is used by Shacharis too. So apparently there's an answer for it when it comes to Shacharis. So the same answer can be applied to Hashkivenu. So from that perspective, you could be saying that Shacharis and Ma'ariv have the same policy regarding the hermetic sealing issue. And the same status applies to Hashkivenu and Hashem's Fasai. What is that status? Something Arichta. What does that mean? We'll have to figure that out in a second. But the Gemara somewhat is dodging, because we saw that it's not really the case that Shacharis and Ma'ariv actually are equal, because despite the fact that the Gemara saved us from seeing them as different, there are apparently differences. And how much of a difference is the topic of some debate. So on the one hand, we saw that everyone agrees that there is a Kaddish in between. And the Kaddish either is permissible because of Tfilas Arvus Rishos, or maybe is affirmatively there because of Tfilas Arvus Rishos. And we talked about what that means. And beyond that, so there is a recitation that some have and some don't have of Yireinenu, Baruch Hashem La'olam. And what exactly is the basis for that and the explanation of the reality that some say it and some don't say it? So that's a topic that was taken up by Tosfos and in greater detail the Rabbeinu Yonah. So that's something of even greater significance. So let's take a look at the Rabbeinu Yonah for a moment. The formatting of this Gemara is different than my Gemara at home. So it takes a second to find. But it's Beis and Beis, Bedape Harif. And if you have the Dape Harifs that are normal Dape Harifs.
I took a photo of them with Rebo and somebody sent them to the chat.
Yes. All right, so here it is. So, whatever formatting your Gemara has. So, it's very significant, the paragraph before, but we'll come back to that because it's addressing a different point. But just where he talks about the controversial paragraph, Zviyesh Lishol, Al Mas Samchu Olam Lahosif Elaymer Acharkach, after Hashkivenu. Again, his comments about Hashkivenu is very important for us, but we'll come back to that afterwards. So after saying Hashkivenu, he says, what does the world rely on to add after that? V'leimer acharkach psukim shal birchas hamoyuch b'chvodo shal zeh loyomru kugol gul arichta damya. The Gemara doesn't talk about that and call that gul arichta. V'hevi hafsaka, and that would seem to be, therefore, a hafsik. U'miksas hachachamim hayu nimnoim lomram. So some chachamim don't say these. V'kach hayu menhago shumayi haramban. And this is the practice of my Rebbe the Ramban. Of all my Rebbeinu Yonah, Krovo, Nosan Tamil, Minak Shinog, Koha, Imam Omro, Shevetchil, Haisit, Philos, Arbis, Rishos. So originally, because Philos, Arbis was Rishos, Hayu Omrim, Eilu, Apsukim, Sheish, Behem, Yudchas, Haskaris, Kineged, Yudchas, Brachos. These Psukim that have 18 references to God's name. Parallel 18 brachos of Shmona Esrei, v'chos b'malayim, v'omrim kaddish, v'yotzin, v'acharkach, v'afal pi, shakavu chova, nishar hadavar kmo haminek harishon, v'lo hevi havsaka, ben gula tefila. And this was not considered to be a hefsek ben gula tefila, dekeven shmitchila dait tehochi kavu chova, lo mikri havsaka. So here, this was established there, because they originally didn't have a Shmona Esrei, and they put this there to be a Shmona Esrei, and because they left it there, it's not considered to be a Hefsek. Now, there's a couple ways to understand that. It sounds like he's saying that it's not a Hefsek just because they told you to say it, and they left it there, and therefore, because they told her to say it, it's not called a hefsek. But you could also say on some level that it accomplishes the goal of smichas gula tefila, because it was a form of tefila. Your own?
What does that mean exactly, that they didn't have the Shmona Esrei? Meaning, it wasn't because it was a rishos, so they didn't have a formal tefila for it?
Yeah.
If that's the case, why couldn't they just, I mean, then what about chakras and mincha? Why couldn't they just institute that Shmona Esrei initially, as opposed to making like an abbreviated version from Arif?
Well, what in terms of, what were they done with Shacharis and Mincha?
Meaning why for Mariv is there the abbreviated Baruch Olam, which is the abbreviated Shmon Esrei? Mm-hmm. Why was that only for Mariv? Meaning why?
Because it was Philos Arvish Rishos.
So it was Daf, they specifically did a shortened 18 brachos for Mariv to signify that it was a Rishos?
Or either to signify it was a Rishos, or because being that it was a Rishos, they didn't obligate the full Shmona Esrei.
God, and over time it just...
And then once they started saying a full Shmona Esrei, they didn't stop saying it.
Right.
So since this was once upon a time the obligation, so then it's not considered to be a Hefsek. But it's an interesting question. What do we mean when we say it's not a Hefsek? So his language here is saying that because they established that as a chiyuv, it's not a hefsek. Right? His language here is, so lo hevi hefsaka de kevan shmitchila dait de hachi kavu achova lo mikri hefsaka.
It's not a hefsek because it's the tefila.
Right. So that's not exactly what he's saying, but it seems like that the svar to say like that, right? That this accomplishes the goal of...
Isn't he saying that that is the chiyuv? They were misaking that as the chiyuv?
So they were originally misaking that as the chiyuv.
Right, so then that's the chiyuv of tefillah for Ma'ariv, and now we have exactly smichas gula l'tefillah.
So it doesn't sound like it fits his words 100%, but it sounds logical. And that, especially when we considered the question last time, as to what we're accomplishing with Smichas Gula Tefillah. Are we benefiting the Tefillah? Are we benefiting the Gula? So if we're trying to benefit the Gula, so that could accomplish that. Right? If we're saying that the reason we want to follow up Gula with Tefillah is because it makes the statement of the Gula more intense, or more genuine, that you say, God is my Redeemer, and then you show that's true, that you believe that, by asking him for your needs. So this accomplishes that too. Which, in an interesting way, could also be a justification for keeping this recitation today, even though we have a Shemona Esrei. Which is interesting because I don't think it's articulated that way specifically in the Rishonim. But it's an interesting way to understand the practice. I don't think it's spelled out this way exactly. But to say that we have a Kaddish in between, when the Rishonim say that we have a Kaddish in between Hashkivenu and Shemona Esrei for Ma'ariv, and that's because Tefillas Arav is Rishus. And the different Tosfosim that say that say it in slightly different ways. And we discussed Rav Soloveitchik shir, and we talked about a little bit what that means, and just because it's a Rishus, why do you have to have it? It could be that the factor of Tefillas Arav is Rishus meant also that there's a development that once upon a time there wasn't a Shemona Esrei there at all, and there were these recitations instead. And so now, for those who still continue to say those recitations, that actually accomplishes the Smichas Gula Tefillah without any hefsek. And the Shemona Esrei is still there, keeping the other part of Smichas Gula Tefillah, keeping the order of Shema and Shemona Esrei, but not creating one unit of Shema and that Shemona Esrei, which is an interesting formulation. Okay, so that's one thing to think about. But now, in terms of, that's just in terms of these extra recitations, which are subject to different practices in terms of whether to say them at all or not. But in terms of what we do say, Hashkivenu, and what that itself reflects, being that it's equated with Hashem's Svasai. And the assumption also that there is a relationship between Hashem's Svasai and the other side, which is Yularatzan and Rifi. So what is the status of all of these recitations? Yes, sir.
What's to say those two things are connected?
They seem to parallel each other. And the Shulchan Aruch has a separate siman about Yula Ratzon.
I was asking about the question before. I was curious about when it comes to tefillah,
mm-hmm.
we don't really. Meaning the whole thing is we invoke specific things, but the entire idea is that we're praising Hashem and asking for things, which is really more also an extension of praising Hashem. Being just like Hashem, you're empowered enough to give this stuff to us. So when it comes to trying to like fit things into what is Gula, what is tefillah. We can theoretically fit anything in. So, like, if there is something, there's such thing as a hefsek between Gula and Tefillah, why are we keep trying to fit things in there when, in theory, a lot of things could fit, almost anything in Tefillah could fit in there?
What do you mean?
Like, meaning the halukas, those are praising Hashem, so that's Tefillah, like, you know?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Why should anything be there? Or
why should anything be there besides for Gal Yisrael and then starting Shemona Esrei? Because it seems to me that anything could really fit into the, you know, we put in Hashkivinu. Hashkivinu is because the Hashem, protect us forever from Davara. Like, I feel like those are, there's so many things could fit into those. Like, as you can expand.
So
the
why should you add anything? Or
why should anything? I feel like almost anything. Why should anything qualify as fitting into Gula and Tefillah when theoretically anything in davening feels like it could fit into those two categories?
So why did they add anything?
Yeah. Why are they making reasons for things? Why was anything added?
So in terms of Hashivenu, so that's the first paragraph from Rabbeinu Yonah. So the central question that we want to know here is, when we say Arichta, so what do we mean? Right? Do we mean that it's not a hefsek, and therefore it's no more of a hefsek than just an extension of either part of the equation here, Gula or Tefillah? Or do we mean, no, literally, it is a part of Gula and Tefillah? So look for a second here to Rabbeinu Yonah, the first paragraph that we skipped before. So back on that, he says, V'hatam she'enu hafsaka, mipnei shashkivenu me'en ha'gu'ulahu. So the reason Hashkivenu is not a hefsek is because it is literally of the Geula. Shebeshah she'aver Hashem lingayfes Mitzrayim, hayu mefachdin and mespalin livro l'kayim dvarav. They were praying to God that He should fulfill His words. B'shul yitain hamashlis lavo el batehem, that He shouldn't allow the destroyer to come to their houses. Shederach hatzadikim shireim tamid sheyigram hachet, right, which just happens to be what the Gemara in the previous Amud had brought up, that even there's a haftacha there that the tzadikim are constantly afraid that something could go wrong. Right, for those of you here on Shabbos, I spoke about this Shabbos morning, about the possibility that the fast of Erev Pesach is because the Bukharim fasted then, even though they were excluded anyway. So because of that tefillah, so we embedded here Hashkivenu, that God should save us from all things. So it's a very powerful thing to think about, that here we are evoking the Geula, and so at the moment of the Geula, we remember that the Jews were praying to make sure they were a part of Geula. So Chazal established that we should also make a prayer for protection at that time, to recall that that was also a part of the Geula experience. And that's there in order to help us recall that Geula experience. It's a powerful thought. So why is Rabbeinu Yonah taking the trouble to tell us this? This is a very significant paragraph. Why is he taking the trouble to tell us this? No, what's he saying? It's important. Yeah, Eric?
If it's not actually Gula, it's really, you can't put it in?
Maybe, but you don't have to go that far. I mean, okay, that's it could be, but you don't necessarily have to go that far. That's interesting. I mean, I wasn't necessarily thinking that far, but
I'm too far right now. I don't know.
Yeah, okay. Well, the question, let's take it a step back. What we want to know is these extensions that the Gemara is allowing, right? And Mimela, it sounds like from the Gemara that whatever is true about Hashkivenu is true about Hashem Svasai. You theoretically could draw a line between them, and there would have been a big svara to do so, except that the Gemara seems to connect them. There's probably still room to distinguish. But Lamaisa, the Gemara does seem to equate them. So that leaves room for us to ask, and you got to see a little bit from some of the Makoros this morning that there are a number of practical nafgaminas. Are these statements actually a part of the Geula and part of the Tefillah, respectively? Or are they just permissible insertions? So this Rabbeinu Yonah seems to be relevant to that, because he is making the effort to explain how Hashkivenu is actually thematically connected to the Geula. So it sounds like he's telling you it's not simply a permissible insertion, but it is a part of the Geula. Which sounds like then, if they're equated, that Hashem's Fasai is a part of the Tefillah. So if that's the case, then that has various nafkaminas, which we'll go over in a second. Now, Eric, why I said to you, you're going farther than I was expecting, is because you could also ask another question. You could say, all right, it's one or the other, but maybe we just want to know which one it is because of the various nafkaminas that we'll discuss in a minute. What you were saying that goes beyond that is maybe it has to be one or the other, because maybe Chazal wouldn't have allowed an insertion that's not main ha'inyan. Or maybe there's something to understand there in terms of the nature of Hilchos Hefsek, and that the whole idea of there being something there that could be both permitted and not main ha'inyan is somehow conceptually problematic. Or we need to address if that is a possibility or not. And maybe there's going to be a machlokas about that, or the machlokas, two different ways to look at this machlokas, which essentially is a machlokas. So, for example, we'll see if we get to it, or maybe I'll give you a look tomorrow, that the Rush may understand this differently. What we just saw in Rabbeinu Yonah, who said the Hashkivenu is thematically linked, but the Rush doesn't necessarily agree that it's thematically linked, and probably understands it just as a permissible insertion. So you could understand this machlokas in two ways, which may be related or could be severable. One, is the insertion actually now a part of the tefillah? And by the way, the nafkaminas are all on the tefillah end. So just to make very clear what we're doing here, how the transfusion is working. The nafkaminas are basically all about Hashem's Fasai and Yularetzon. So the nafkaminas are really all on the tefillah end. So every question of practical application is going to come on the tefillah question. But because the Gemara equates Hashem's Fasai and Hashkivenu, and this Rabbeinu Yonah is telling us about Hashkivenu, we're basically using a transitive property and saying, this teaches us about how Hashkivenu is related to Geula. And if that's the case, and the Gemara tells us that Hashkivenu is equated to Hashem's Fasai, it can teach us about how Hashem's Fasai is related to Tefillah. You follow that somewhat convoluted path? Okay, Yaron, you have a question?
What's the tie-in to Yula Ratzon? Meaning, if that's at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, so what's the comparison?
They seem to be parallel to each other.
Yeah,
Hashem Sevasai is an introduction. Hashem Sevasai is an introduction, and Yula Ratzon is the closing statement.
Right, but what ramification would that have for Smichas Gula Tefillah?
Oh, it wouldn't, but it would have the same way that there's an opening and closing statement, and those statements may or may not become actually a part of Tefillah. So then there could be various nafkaminas, which none of which we have listed yet.
Okay, and then the second question was, according to the Rush, if we said it's just a permissible insertion, so I guess the question, if it's just a permissible insertion, so what's the point of saying it if it like could possibly cause a serious halachic problem? Meaning, according to Rabbeinu Yonah, if it's really part of the Geula, if it makes sense to be there, if you take the opinion that it's just, you could be saying it or you could insert it, why would you do that if it could cause a serious problem?
Because it may serve some purpose. So maybe there's two things going on, for example. Maybe when it comes to Shemoneh Esrei, so there's two things happening. We want to ask God to let us daven, and we want to daven. They're two separate things. And maybe at the end of Tefillah, there's also two things happening. We finish davening, and we ask a separate Tefillah that God should accept our Tefillahs. And we'll maybe add a little bit tomorrow about just how significant that is. So, being that we're almost out of time, but you saw some of the makaros, and I'll add a little bit more tomorrow. So based on what you've seen or based on what you can speculate, so tell me some nafkaminas. What difference would it make about whether it's a part of tefillah or not? That's what you want to address?
Yeah, so the miracle of specifically mentioned in Chazar says Shas, if you forgot Hashem Tzitzak, I don't know why it would be different if you forgot it if you said regular Shemon Esrei. Maybe just like less likely, I guess, but yeah, Hashem Tzitzak. Would you have to repeat Shemon Esrei if you forgot to say Hashem Tzitzak? Maybe even conversely, would you have to repeat Dash Kivinu if you forgot it? Would it mean if these things are mamish a part of Gula and Tefillah, then you would have to. But if they're just additions, then it wouldn't be necessary to repeat it.
Right, so again, in terms of Hashkin Venu, you don't have to focus on Hashem. They mentioned the Nafkaminas tend to really be on the Tefillah side. So in terms of Tefillah,
so I was trying to maybe take some there. But yeah, definitely Hashem Tzitzak, if you need to repeat Shemon Esrei, if you forgot it.
Okay. So that's one. What else?
If the Chazan says it out loud
or not? So Chazan says it out loud. What else? Anything else to you saw the Bir Halacha?
It's the Bir Halacha talks about.
Bir Halacha talks about that. Or if there's something that requires you to repeat the Shemon Esrei, the Einayim L'Mishpat actually talks about that. If there's something that requires you to repeat the Shemon Esrei, so then do you also say Hashem Svasai again? Or do you assume you only say Hashem Svasai once as a general introduction to Tefillah? But that doesn't necessarily mean that the second Shemon Esrei is going to require its own Hashem Svasai. And on the Yul Ratzon side, so there is a discussion also which has got a little bit more to it, so we'll explore in more detail tomorrow. But this, and it's got more behind it, but this is Nageya for Erev Yom Kippur, when we add in the Vidui at the end of Shemon Esrei. So should that be recited before or after you say the Yul Ratzon and Reifi? So that connects to the question of whether Yul Ratzon is a part of Shemon Esrei or whether that is a supplication after Shemon Esrei. But it also goes to the question of what it means to say the Vidui after Shemon Esrei or at the end of Shemon Esrei.
Is that why we say it twice?
Say what twice?
We say Yul Ratzon before and after the...
Oh, paragraph. So that's also something we'll have to try to see. So that, and as I'll note, so I guess we'll mention a little more tomorrow, this is something that Rav Shechter Shlita talks about in an essay in the Sefer Bikvei Hatzon. This is this idea also of the Shemon Esrei for Meir, just parenthetically. So the idea of Tefillas Arvus Rishus, which is a sugi in the fourth parak, which maybe we'll have a chance to see a little bit after Pesach, but I think Rav Shach suggested that connects to the fact that we don't have a Chazaras Hashatz for Ma'ariv, because the point of Chazaras Hashatz is to be motzi somebody who isn't a baki. But in order to be motzi somebody, you have to share the chiyuv. And the chiyuv, if it's tefillah, the whole tefillah is a reshus in the first place. So then you have a difficult time being motzi somebody else. So that also connects to the tefillah sarvus reshus component. Okay, so far so good. Any questions about that? All right, so then I guess we'll stop there. And Bez Hashem, we'll add a little bit like this tomorrow and also try to get into the Kriya Shema Lamitra. And then again, I'll tell you to go full speed ahead, and we'll try to make as many of the errors as we can.